Well, good afternoon and welcome to class two. These are a series of four classes that are being hosted by, sponsored by the Churches of Christ Heritage Center and Payson Library. So we're having two women historians speak today about two significant women in our history. So we opened with Dr. Loretta Honeycutt, who teaches history at Pepperdine, and she had written a book on Alexander Campbell's wife, Selina Campbell. So that's what we've had in the last hour. Now our teacher at this hour is Bonnie Miller, Pepperdine grad. She did her BA here and then stayed on for a master's degree. Bonnie wrote a book a few years back called Messengers of the Risen Sun in the Land of the Rising Sun. She went back to 1882 or so and studied every single woman who decided they could do more for the cause of Christ in Japan than they probably could in America, if they had more freedom in another country. And Sarah Andrews, this woman from Tennessee, ends up giving her whole life. And we, in the Heritage Center, we have a lot on Sarah Andrews. And she really was famous. And we have the photo albums of Motoyuki Nomura. And there are even photographs there of Sarah at her funeral, in her casket, when she died in 1961. I was in high school. I remember in Canada, the leader of our school, come on in, we haven't even started yet, I'm just talking, saying, we want all of your students to know that Sarah Andrews has died in Japan, and we want you to know who she was. And that was a name I had never heard of, but our principal thought we ought to know something about her. The lecture you're about to hear, I heard last year, last summer, at Summer Celebration at Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee. And I said to Bonnie, after I heard it, coming into this lecture, I thought I knew Sarah Andrews. I mean, I've studied her a lot. When I taught Restoration History here, I made my own daughter write on Sarah Andrews for her term paper. Because she said, Daddy, I don't know what to write. And I said, cut your teeth on Sarah Andrews. You know, so I helped guide my own daughter through that project. I thought I knew Sarah Andrews, and then I sat through this lecture. And she just opened so many doors that, into Sarah Andrews that I knew nothing about. And what really stunned me were her photographs. Because we share photographs together. And I thought, where did you get these photographs that I have never seen of Sarah Andrews? So you're in for a delightful time in this lecture. Will you welcome Bonnie Miller from Vancouver, Washington?
Thank you, Gary. As you mentioned, we do have a book out, and you can find it in the ACU bookstore over in the Sand Dollar, wherever it is. And it does tell the story of over 50 women, single women, who went to Japan as missionaries before World War II from the Restoration Movement. But as you know, as Lori mentioned last hour, the Restoration Movement was a little slow getting started in mission work. And in 1849, the American Christian Missionary Society was formed, and it was controversial. Those who supported the Missionary Society said, you know, it's just an efficient way of doing missionary work, carrying out the Great Command. And those who opposed the Missionary Society said, there's nothing authorized in Scripture besides the Church to do missionary work. Therefore, it's forbidden. And so this application of how you interpret Scripture, the silence of Scripture in particular, does it, if the Bible doesn't speak to something, does that mean it's permitted or does that mean it's prohibited? And this misunderstanding and differences of opinion about the silence of Scripture would eventually lead to the multiple divisions we have in the Restoration Movement today. Let me give you a little background on Japan. At the close of the 19th century, Japan was a mysterious group of islands because it had been closed to the Western world for 250 years. From roughly 1600 till 1853, Japan had not allowed any foreigners within her borders or anyone to go outside of her borders, really. And so for 250 years, they had no contact with anyone outside of Japan. And so this string of islands that stretches roughly the same distance as from Maine to Florida experiences about the same kind of climate change also. We have some very cold, snowy regions and some very hot, humid regions as well. The religion of Japan... we'll get to that one later. The religion of Japan at the beginning of the 20th century was a mixture of Buddhism and Shintoism. Now, Buddhism is more a philosophy of life, where Shintoism involves the worship of multiple gods. This is a very typical scene in Tokyo. You'll find these little shrines at nearly every home where the ancestors are worshipped. They bring their offerings and offer prayers there to their ancestors and all their multiple gods. There were government laws that restricted the conversion to Christianity. And as late as 1868, it was prohibited to evangelize and convert. In fact, a person who committed or converted to Christianity could be killed if they were Japanese. These laws were not lifted until 1899, and at that time, there were a total of 625 Protestant missionaries in Japan from all denominations. And of the over 40 million Japanese citizens, less than 40,000 were Christians of any kind. And that's less than 0.1% of the population professing any kind of Christianity. In old Japan, it was considered improper for a man to carry on a conversation with a woman, and therefore it became necessary to recruit women to come to Japan as missionaries to teach the women. And so an appeal was made for more women to come. And one of the first women to respond was Kate Johnson. She was sent by the Foreign Christian Missionary Society in 1868. Was that 86? Get those numbers backed up. She was 26 years old when she went to Japan. This picture is when she retired 31 years later. She did a lot of good during those years that she was in Japan, established schools and converted a lot of Japanese girls. But her greatest accomplishment was probably the influence she had on one student. And it wasn't even a Japanese student. It was an American student before she went to Japan. That student was Ada Shepherd. Her family moved to Madison, Indiana, when Ada was only 10 years old. And she became a student under Kate's tutelage for the next 5 years. Ada's family moved to Tennessee before Kate went to Japan, but they maintained contact. There was only 9 years difference in their age, and so there was a close friendship between teacher and student. When Kate came home on furlough in 1904, she actually came to Ada's home in Tennessee at that time and spent time in Ada's home. And her friendship with Ada caused Ada to want to become a missionary also. But God had other plans for Ada. She had fallen in love and married Will Andrews. There's Will over on the far right here, and Ada, and these are their 7 children. And Ada passed on her desire to be a missionary to her daughter, Sarah Andrews, over here. Sarah was only 12 years old when Kate visited their home that year in 1904, and she was captivated by the stories Kate told about this mysterious land of the rising sun. And she decided that even though her mother couldn't go as a missionary, she would go in her place. 2 years later, at the age of 14, Sarah was baptized by Ivy Bradley, the minister of the Walnut Street Church of Christ in Dixon, a church that Ada's parents had helped to start. Shortly after her baptism, she told Bradley, "I hope to go to Japan as a missionary someday and help teach them about the true God and Savior, and I'm going to work and try to prepare myself for that work." Well, Sarah's early desire to be a missionary in Japan was confirmed when J.M. McCaleb paid a visit to Dixon also. He was one of our first independent missionaries in Japan, and he came to Walnut Street Church on furlough in 1909. After Sarah heard him speak concerning the need for more gospel workers in Japan, she told him she planned to go to Japan as a missionary when she graduated from school. Well, McCaleb had heard this promise from other young people when he spoke at churches, and none had ever followed through on their commitment. And I imagine rather condescendingly, he patted Sarah on the head and said, "Will you let me know when you're ready to come?" Well, 4 years later, in 1913, Sarah wrote to McCaleb, "You remember a few years ago when you were at Dixon that a little girl came to you after the last lecture and told you she was going to be a missionary in Japan. I am now 21 years old and am making preparation to fulfill this, my greatest desire." Well, McCaleb was apparently not convinced of her commitment even then, as he didn't publish that letter in his paper for another 2 years. Then in March of 1915, Sarah wrote again and stated, "I'm ready for you to announce in the papers that I wish to go to Japan in the fall." Her announcement appeared in the church paper Word and Work, along with this picture of her. Funds for her passage were asked for, and contributions were to be sent to Ivy Bradley at Dixon. Bradley offered assurance that he would be responsible to help Sarah raise the necessary support, and even suggested that maybe he could get the Walnut Street to assume all of her support. Unfortunately, he was not able to do that, as Sarah, like all the other independent missionaries, had to raise her own funds. And it became that unpleasant task of asking friends and family and strangers and churches to support her while she was in Japan. Well, 4 months later, in July of 1915, the Gospel Advocate carried another appeal from Sarah's minister to Christians to send funds to enable Sarah to go to Japan. The goal was to raise $300 by September. Bradley figured that that would be enough for her ocean passage and the first month's support while she was in the country. He even calculated that if all of the loyal churches sent just 5 cents, that that would be enough to support not only her first months and travel, but several months. But by loyal churches, he meant those who were opposed to missionary societies. Well, this Christian Advocate carried a second, more forceful appeal from Bradley in September. "Send me your contribution for this work at once. Do not put it off. You might overlook it later. Do it now. Remember, now is the accepted time. Today." Bradley then gave an accounting of all the funds that had been thus far contributed. And so far, they had raised $66 in July. And by the time of this second appeal in September, the total came to $86. He even gave an accounting of all the contributors, including their names and how much each one had sent. The appeal for financial support continued past September and into October and November, and finally in December, Sarah's father provided the necessary funds for her to buy a one-way ticket to Japan. She left her family behind in Dixon on Christmas Day, 1915, to travel 7 days across the continent by train to Vancouver, British Columbia, where she would board a ship to take her to Japan. Other than attending college at the State Normal School in Memphis, Sarah had never been out of her own county where she had been born. And she marveled at the great rolling plains of Central America, followed by the majestic Rocky Mountains, and finally the expanse of the Pacific Ocean, sights that she had only imagined before. She arrived in Vancouver 3 hours before her ship was to weigh anchor. She had just celebrated her 23rd birthday the month before. Sailing into strong headwinds, now let's catch up here. Her ship crossed 6,000 miles of ocean and reached Japan on January 16th of 1916, where J.M. McCaleb met her at the dock. But just 4 months after arriving in the country, doctors advised her that she ought to go home, that she was suffering from some kind of severe nervous affliction. Apparently trying to learn the language plus the burden of raising money, and this was compounded by paying for the tuition at language school, to say nothing of the culture shock that she was experiencing, took a toll on her health. But despite the difficulty of learning the language and fretting about finances, Sarah rejected the doctor's advice and was responsible for the baptism of 10 women that first year on the field. One of those converts was a young girl by the name of Ikki Nemura. Ikki-san remained with Sarah as her friend and helper for the duration of Sarah's life. Well, in November of 1916, McCaleb reported that a schoolmistress in Arkansas by the name of Lily Seifert had volunteered to go to Japan. She arrived a year later on October 25th, 1917. As with other missionaries, learning the language became Lily's first priority. But even before conquering how to communicate, she was able to assist Sarah and McCaleb as they worked handing out tracts to people as they gathered in the parks on feast days or walked to and from the Buddhist temples. She taught English to those who were eager to learn the Western language, and she visited those who were physically and spiritually sick. 3 years after Sarah had arrived in Japan in 1919, she felt comfortable enough with the language that she decided to move out on her own and begin a new work independently. So she chose Okitsu, a city 100 miles southwest of Tokyo. Here's Tokyo up here in the Bay of Yokohama. Down here is Okitsu in the Shizuoka Prefecture and the town of Shizuoka. Notice also here is Numazu, where she will begin another work later on. Her method of evangelism was to establish a kindergarten, as most of the foreign women missionaries did, and she would teach the children about Jesus. As they learned the stories from the Bible, they readily took the stories home to their parents, where they taught their parents. When it was time to teach the adults, Sarah would organize a women's Bible study. This is one of her women's classes. Sarah is down here on the end, and third one in, and then Ikki-san next to her. She opened this first kindergarten with 85 applications for admission, but the work grew much larger than she had anticipated, and her next communication reported that there were 150 children receiving instruction. Before the end of her second year in Okitsu, Sarah sent word of 9 baptisms, including Ikisan's 61-year-old mother. But still, the road was very difficult work, strewn with disappointments and overcoming generations of superstition and tradition. For instance, when the town chief of Sarah's village died, his widow threw herself under a train to commit suicide in keeping with the Japanese tradition of committing suicide after a husband's death. When there were baptisms to be performed, Sarah would send for one of the local Japanese preachers. This is Otoshige Fujimori. He had to ride a train 10 hours to get to Sarah's village to perform the baptisms, but he would readily comply. Oto, as he was called, had been converted in Japan, in America when he was 23 by a little German immigrant by the name of Frederick Wagner. I wish I had time to tell you the story of Wagner and Otoshige Fujimori. Fascinating story of how a little German man who wanted to learn to read English resulted in the gospel being taken to Africa, South America, Alaska, all over the world because of that. But that's a story for another day. The church paper Word and Work carried regular reports of the missionaries' activities in a column written by Don Carlos James. He became known as a one-man missionary society because of his enthusiastic support of world missions. In 1921, James took his wife and made a circuit of the globe visiting our missionaries around the world. The day they arrived in Tokyo was the day Sarah was leaving on her first furlough. But Mr. and Mrs. James stayed in Japan for nearly a year before continuing their world tour. This photo was taken of the Church of Christ missionaries who were in the country at the time of the James visit. The only one missing is Sarah. But you have back here Jane McCaleb, here's Lily Seifert, and the Bixlers and Rhodes, and more Foxes. And over here is Don Carlos James and his wife. And down here is Ikisan and Koto. I have no idea who the others are. On September 1st of 1923, Japan suffered the most severe natural disaster in her history. An earthquake measuring between 7.9 and 8.4 on the Richter scale, centered just offshore of Yokohama, destroyed 3/4 of Tokyo and practically all of Yokohama within 30 seconds. The ground dropped vertically 3 feet, cracks opened in the earth large enough to swallow a car, and the concrete seawall swung back and forth like a gate before collapsing into the sea. Within 10 minutes, the entire streets of Tokyo were 10 inches deep in water. Fires erupted and burned for 2 days, consuming what was still standing after the initial shock. As a point of comparison, the earthquake recently in Nepal has been reported. The last report I heard was that somewhere close to 6,000 or 7,000 people have been killed in Nepal. You remember the earthquake and tsunami in Japan just a few years ago, when 15,000 were reported killed. This earthquake of 1923 killed over 105,000 Japanese people. Another 35,000 were reported missing and presumed dead. Thousands more were injured, and 1.5 million were left homeless. McCaleb was concerned about Japan, Sarah, so he made the trip down to Okitsu to check on her. Found that she and Ikisan had been safe. They clung to each other, ran out of the house together. As they said, the ground rolled in movement beneath their feet. Sarah and McCaleb set about, with the help of Ikisan, to distribute clothing and household items to the earthquake victims. They handed out 328 Bibles and estimated that at least 10,000 people had heard the gospel preached. But the added benevolent work, followed by the cold winter months that year, took a toll on Sarah's health, and she was reported to be sick in bed in February of 1924. Now, you may have heard about how Japanese houses were made of paper. This is literally true. The walls were rice paper, which did nothing to keep the cold out during the winter months, especially when the only heat source they had was a small hibachi barbecue that burned propane or coal. During the summer, it also did nothing to keep the hot, humid air out either. So the prognosis for Sarah's health situation was that she should have a better house. Now, J.M. McCaleb had a house built. This is McCaleb's home. It is still standing today, built in 1907. It is preserved as a state cultural monument as the first Western-style house built in Japan. When you walk in, the very first thing you see is this large bulletin board filled with these pictures. And these are all pictures of our Church of Christ missionaries. There's Sarah is here and McCaleb up here, all these different churches that they established. And then down here you see this TV monitor. Moto Nomura has made a continuous looping video in Japanese explaining who these people were, why this house is significant, the work they did when they came to Japan. And it attracts quite a large gathering of people. I was there on a Thursday in early September one year, a few years ago, and there was probably 24 people who came through touring the house while I was there. So it attracts quite a following. Well, even though Michaela had this lovely house to live in, Sarah didn't. And Sarah's brother Pete was especially concerned about Sarah's health. And along with Aunt Meg Lipscomb, who also was concerned about Sarah's health, they mounted a campaign to buy Sarah a house. Now, they had discovered that the Sears Roebuck catalog actually had a house kit you could order by mail order. And finally, by the spring of 1924, funds from friends and family were sufficient to buy Sarah a prefab house that was shipped over from America and assembled in Shizuoka, the city where she had opened the new work. This prefab structure was sent on a ship from Portland, Oregon, with each piece numbered for assembly. There was only one problem. The instructions were all written in English, and the workers Sarah hired could not read English. So every day, Sarah would go to the work site and translate the instructions for them. She was very satisfied when the house was finished with only a few pieces left over. But she was especially glad that the house was now wired for electricity, because previously she had only had candlelight. Well, the shortage of missionaries was partially alleviated as two more single women decided to enter the Japanese work. Clara Kennedy arrived in August of 1924, at the same time that Hetty Lee Ewing announced her intentions to join those on the field, although it would be another 2 years before Hetty Lee actually arrived. Clara spent 12 years in Japan from 1924 to 1936, working primarily with young people teaching music. Lily Seifert gained some much-needed assistance from two Japanese helpers, a young man and woman by the name of Kensho Yane and Kame Ogawa. The young couple were married just shortly before Lily's first furlough. And over the years, Lily became a surrogate mother to the Yane's three children. Well, Hetty Lee Ewing had made her decision to go to Japan as a response from Lily writing a letter to O.E. Phillips. Hetty Lee was attending a meeting in Abilene where O.E. Phillips was preaching, and he read a letter from Lily where she was begging for Phillips to find someone about her age to come to Japan and work with her. Hetty Lee remembered thinking, maybe I'm the one. Maybe I should go. Well, Hetty Lee had grown up with an emotionally distant and a verbally abusive father, and she had suffered from low self-esteem. She wanted to become a teacher, but her father had convinced her that she was too stupid to pass the physical examination to become a teacher. Indeed, she failed it three times before finally passing and getting her license to teach. But she was sure she would never be able to master that difficult Japanese language. But Phillips assured her that once she got in the country, she'd be okay. She could learn it. But there was one major obstacle in her way, and that was her father. He had never approved of her becoming a teacher or getting an education, and she could only imagine what his reaction would be to this new venture of going to Japan. But she set a goal for herself to go to Japan within a year. And during the first few months of that year, her father took a vacation to another city and sent a letter back to her saying he had found a nice woman there that he decided to marry. And Hetty Lee figured the first obstacle was now taken care of. There was someone else to care for his father. But her next step was provided by Sam Hall, a preacher in Nashville who had a great interest in the work in Los Angeles with the Japanese. Hall arranged for her to go to Los Angeles and spend a year studying with Hirosuke Ishiguro. He would give her beginning orientation classes and language lessons. Ishiguro had been converted in Japan, then came to America to study further at Abilene Christian, and then decided to stay in America to evangelize the Japanese here. Finding the largest population of Japanese in Los Angeles, that's where he settled and established the first Japanese Church of Christ in America, known as the Westside Church of Christ. But at the end of that first year that Hetty Lee had sent as her goal, she still did not have the money to travel to Japan. And then, just as unexpectedly as the letter from her father arrived, she received another unexpected letter from Sam Hall. He wrote, "Sister Ewing, you may go downtown and buy yourself a trunk, because I'm sending you a $300 check to send you out to Japan." The money was a gift from Cora Brooks, a woman in Baltimore, Maryland, who had inherited $10,000, and she decided she wanted to invest this inheritance in the gospel, and that Sam Hall was going to be her investment broker. So she sent him the money, and he then sent $300 to Hetty Lee. He sent more money to Sarah Andrews, and then the remainder was used to purchase a building for the Westside Church to build to worship in Los Angeles. So finally, on August 13, 1926, Hedy Lee embarked for Japan. But even before she arrived, Sarah was reported to be seriously sick again, and she faced the possibility of needing to return from the field. She said, "I may have to go home later on, and if it seems best, I will. Though as far as my wishes are concerned, I would just as soon go to heaven from Japan." This became a sort of mantra for Sarah's friends and family frequently mentioned having heard her say that it's just as near heaven from Japan as it is from Tennessee. Sarah's physicians directed her to return to America to rest and recuperate. As she departed for Japan, she told her friends, "Some folks may think and talk of being in Japan as a sacrifice, but for me, leaving is the supreme sacrifice." Well, Dr. Mayo, one of the Mayo brothers, had invited her to come to his clinic for tests. He assured her it would only take 3 or 4 days. At the end of 3 weeks, she was still undergoing tests. Another 3 weeks and more exams revealed that there were too many problems. To begin with, she had arthritis, as well as an intestinal parasite that had caused her weight to drop significantly, and there was discomfort in her chest caused by heart muscles, angina. On top of this, Dr. Mayo feared she was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Well, Sarah was relieved of one worry, at least, when Dr. Mayo informed her that there would be no cost for his services or the tests and services she was receiving at the Mayo Clinic because they didn't charge missionaries. When Sarah's health showed no signs of returning by that fall, she moved to Los Angeles to assist with the work at the Westside Church. And at that time, George Pepperdine stepped in and sent his own family physician to look after her at his own expense. This physician believed there was some indefinable problem with Sarah's lungs, and he insisted she take treatments at his office 3 times a week at a cost of $40 or $50 a month. Even though Mr. Pepperdine was paying the bill, Sarah worried about the high cost and was very grateful to George Pepperdine for his assistance. In the meantime, Lily Seifert began expanding her work and opened a school in Kichijoji, 16 miles west of Tokyo. She arranged for this building to be built, in which there was a large, room on one end down here that seated 70 for a chapel. On the other end were classrooms for her kindergarten, and in between was the living quarters for herself with additional classrooms. Her kindergarten opened in 1929 with 150 children. Lily mentioned that she was receiving $45 a month from Mr. Pepperdine's Mission Extension Fund. This was a result of a visit George Pepperdine had made in 1928 when he took his aging mother on a world trip around to visit the missionaries. This is a very rare photo showing the George Pepperdine here in the center and his 71-year-old mother, Mary. Here's Lily Seifert and Hedy Lee Ewing and Clara Kennedy, J.M. McCaleb. There's Ikki-san is over here on the end somewhere. There she is. And Otto back here in the middle somewhere. I think that's him. I can't see from here. These are all the Church of Christ missionaries that were there at the time. Sarah is on leave in the States receiving medical care, so she's missing. But these are the Bixlers, the Foxes, the Rhodes, the Moorheads. They were all there. This little boy here, kind of shy in the background, is Harry Robert Fox, Jr. He would return to Japan as an adult later on and do a lot of missionary work there himself. And then shortly before Sarah arrived back in Japan, another photo was taken. This one also without her, but the rest of the missionaries, they were there. Of course, McCaleb, here's Lily, and Clara, and Hedy Lee. And then down here is Harry Robert Fox, Jr. He's now 90, in his 90 years, 93?
Maybe 94.
Maybe 94 by now, living in Colorado with one of his children. Well, the depression was beginning about this time, and it was beginning to be felt in Japan also as the missionaries experienced the irregularity of contributions coming in. But in spite of this, Sarah had a meeting place erected in the northwest section of Shizuoka City. Another building was erected in Ijiri, which was later renamed Shimizu in 1934, and then another one built in Okitsu. If you ever read the Stone Campbell Encyclopedia, the article on Sarah Andrews says that she started 8 churches in Japan. I wrote that article and it's wrong. She established 4 congregations, but the reason I was confused was because of the changing of names and the different spellings that different journals have reported. And I was confused and thought there were 8 different cities, but there were only 4. These were the first 3. This is the Okitsu Church of Christ building that is still in use today. In the summer of 1935, Word and Work magazine carried a brief statement that Sarah Andrews will have to return to the States for an operation. The surgery evidently was not an immediate need. It was nearly a year later, in May of 36, that she finally arrived in San Francisco for the surgery. And she would not return to Japan until 1939, almost 3 years later. But while she was gone, Lily began to experience health problems. First, she came down with scarlet fever, but she did recover. Then she developed trachoma, an eye disease that can cause blindness if not treated. There, another appeal was made for more financial assistance to pay for the medical care that Lily needed, because health insurance was unheard of at the time. Well, apparently she did receive what she needed, because she did not become blind, but a short time later she suffered what they described as a collapse, which we think was probably a small stroke. She also suffered from high blood pressure and needed some dental work done that required 2.5 hours to extract one tooth. She recovered physically, but friends said that Lily seemed to become paranoid after this. Well, her perceived paranoia was not without foundation, however, as the political situation in the world was changing. It was especially noticeable in Japan as rationing began as early as 1937, as Japan went to war with Manchuria, Korea, and later China. Hedy Lee, in fact, became so concerned about the world situation that she made the decision to leave Japan in October of 1940. That year, the Japanese government formed what was called the Kyodan. This was a Japanese confederation of religious bodies. All religions were to be placed under three divisions: Shinto, Buddhist, and Christian. All Christian denominations were gathered together under one head. The Churches of Christ resisted joining the Kyodan. To do so, they reasoned, would be to abandon their plea for the restoration of New Testament Christianity. Most of the churches that were supported by the Missionary Society went willingly into the Kyodan, seeing it as a move towards Christian unity, which was a goal of the Restoration Movement. But the Churches of Christ saw it as an infringement on church autonomy, as well as a total disregard for biblical authority in regards to doctrine. Unfortunately, a few of the Churches of Christ did enter the Kyodan, some unwittingly and some knowingly. Lily had tried to make provision for her kindergarten and the church property before the Kyodan went into effect. This is Lily's, one of her kindergarten classes, and their mothers. The husband of one of her kindergarten teachers was a lawyer whom she trusted. The lawyer drew up some documents concerning the distribution of Lily's property in case anything should ever happen to her. Unfortunately, the lawyer betrayed her. And not understanding the legal language, she signed the documents, which left everything to the lawyer. She lost everything she owned, including her furniture and the Kichijoji church building. Among the missionaries in Japan from the Restoration Movement, most left the islands before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Even McCaleb had left in October of 1941 and stopped over for a visit with the church in Hawaii. He left there on November 14th, just 3 weeks before the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Sarah and Lily, however, stated that they had no thought of leaving. They confidently told Michaela before he left that they trusted God to take care of them. Of all the American Restoration Movement missionaries in Japan, at the beginning of World War II, only four were single women. Let me rephrase that. Of all the missionaries in Japan, four were left from the American Christian Missionary Society, American Restoration Movement, and all four were single women. There was Emily Cunningham, a widow who was working with the Foreign Christian Missionary Society. There was Grace Farnham, who was also from the Christian Church. Then there was Lily Seifert and Sarah Andrews. Early on the morning of December 8, 1941, a neighbor came to Sarah to inform her that war had been declared between Japan and America. 2 days later, Sarah was taken by armed guard to Japanese military headquarters, where she was ordered to stop teaching immediately and submit an inventory of all properties of everything she owned and relinquish the deeds to the church buildings. She refused to turn over the deeds. A Word and Work optimistically reported in August of 1942, "We think sisters Andrews and Seifert will get along all right, though likely with some inconvenience." Well, Lily was held at the Senjuku prisoner of war camp just outside of Tokyo. The three children of Kinji and Kamayane, whom Lily had been caring for as practically raising on her own, were teenagers when Lily was taken away. They reported being able to visit her and found that she was not mistreated. In fact, most of the prisoners in that camp were simply doing the laundry and preparing meals for the guards. In September of 1942, Sarah was transported under armed guard to a concentration camp in Yokohama. After only two weeks, she was returned to her home, however, because her health was so poor. She was placed under house arrest and would remain there for the duration of the war. Forced to live alone during the final days of the last 2 years of the war, Sarah resorted to selling her furniture piece by piece in order to buy what little food was available. In desperation, she said she boiled leaves from trees for food, boiled and used water from corn stalks for sugar, used seawater for salt, and after months of meatless days, I relished grasshoppers for meat, wishing I could have the same dish often. Well, Britain and the U.S. had arranged with the Japanese government for an exchange of prisoners, Japanese in America who wished to go back to Japan, and American civilians in Japan who wished to come home. Emily Cunningham was among that first exchange, and Lily evidently was part of the second exchange. She was ordered by the government to return from Japan, and so she ordered the Tiamairu, a Japanese ship in Yokohama, and departed Japan on September 13, 1943. The ship was designed to hold 400 passengers, but there were 1,500 passengers on board, including Lily and Grace Farnham. They spent 4 weeks at sea on board this ship before being transferred to the Gripsholm, another ship that would take them across for another 6 weeks before finally, after 10 weeks at the ocean, on December 1, 1943, the ship sailed up New York Harbor past the Statue of Liberty. Lily never returned to Japan. She did assist as an interpreter in a Japanese relocation camp in Arkansas for a time during the remaining years of the war. The three Yanai children that Lily had to leave behind in Japan continued to live in her heart, and after the war, she managed to locate them with the help of Harry Robert Fox, Jr., and sent care packages to them. She even arranged for a scholarship for the youngest boy, Steve, to attend Pepperdine College in 1949. When Lily fell and broke her hip in 1950, she had to move to her sister's home in Porterville to be cared for. Apparently, she had a major stroke while there and passed away in her sleep on the night of August 13, 1954. Sarah did not fare as well as her companions during the war. Shizuoka was a small city at the foot of Mount Fuji, but it contained valuable war plants, including the Mitsubishi Aircraft Engine Factory. From her home, Sarah observed several B-29 air raids on the outskirts of her town and on a neighboring town. And on the night of June 19, 1945, her section of the city was targeted. 30 planes deposited over 189 tons of incendiary bombs on Shizuoka that night. Over 2,000 died, and more than 12,000 were injured. Unbelievably, Sarah slept through the entire bombing raid, unaware of anything that was happening, even though bombs were dropped and houses burned within 60 feet of her home. I think God put her into a deep sleep that night to preserve her life, because if she had gone outside, she probably would have been killed. It was only when she awoke in the morning and looked outside and saw the devastation everywhere around her that she realized what had happened. The morning after the attack, 17 casualties were brought to her home, and she was ordered to care for them. In a state of exhaustion and near starvation, she was no longer able to stand and had to crawl from person to person to care for them. After 2 weeks, they were moved out, leaving behind an infestation of fleas. Then after 2 months, around the middle of August, Sarah noticed the B-29s were not coming over anymore. By the 1st of September, there was evidence of peace. On Sunday morning, October 28th, an American GI by the name of William Billingsley came from Yokohama in a jeep in search of Sarah. Sarah's sister, Myrtle Thompson, who was married to T.B. Thompson, the preacher at Tyler, Texas, they lived near an air base there. And every Sunday, they would invite soldiers to come home with them for dinner. Myrtle would tell them about Sarah and give them a card with Sarah's last known address on it and say, if you get sent to the Japanese theater of operation, would you look for Sarah? They'd had no word from her for over 2 years and didn't even know if she was still alive. And so on Sunday morning, when Billingsley drove up beside this tall, skinny American woman, he said, are you Sarah Andrews? And she said, rather surprised, yes, but how did you know I was here? Billingsley said, my Sunday school teacher has told me about you since I was a little boy. You're one of my heroes. His Sunday school teacher was Myrtle Thompson. Sarah was tall. Everybody who knew her has told me she was probably at least 5'9". At the time Billingsley saw her, she weighed 75 pounds. You can imagine how skinny she must have been then. She spent several days in the hospital in Tokyo for a checkup. However, doctors determined that she was not strong enough to return home at that time, and so it was July of 46 before Sarah was allowed to come back to the States. Once back here, she was given more medical attention, including some vision and dental work. And then she made the surprising decision that she wanted to go back to Japan. Her friends didn't understand why she would do that. She simply told them that it takes a lean horse to run a good race. Although family and friends tried to convince her to stay in America, she said, "I can do more good there on a cot than I can here on my feet." Her plans for Japan included building a rest home to care for the orphans, widows, and the convalescents caused by the war. So once her medical and dental needs were taken care of, in the spring of 1949, she boarded a freighter to take her back to Japan, because a freighter costs less than a passenger ship. Of all the churches established by the American Restoration Movement, including those from the Missionary Society and those by Independence, only four survived World War II. Three of those were the ones Sarah had started. The fourth congregation she began in Numazu after the war was over. Although beset by constant health problems, Sarah saw her dream become reality, and the church in Numazu erected this large building in 1953. It was large enough for the church to meet downstairs and upstairs. Oops. And this corner room was Sarah's bedroom, and then other rooms for other widows. About 8 years ago, the church added this new meeting facility next door to the original, and they now use Sarah's building as a place for youth activities and classes. Finally, over the years, during the summer heat and the hardening of arteries and low blood pressure contributed to a series of strokes, and in the summer of 1961, after a week of difficulty speaking, Ikki-san took Sarah to the hospital in Tokyo, but was informed that there was nothing more the hospital could do for her. Ikki-san then brought her back to her home in Numazu, where she had another stroke that proved fatal. Sarah passed away on September 16, 1961. A memorial service was held in a large rented hall in order to accommodate the hundreds who wished to come and pay their respects. Part of the service included a tape-recorded message in Japanese that Sarah had made herself some weeks before in order to comfort those who would grieve her passing. According to her wishes, she was buried in Japan. Her ashes were buried in Japan. And the Japanese Christians erected this large monument to her honor. Her name is at the top, across the bar here, and then this large panel tells somewhat of the work she did in Japan. A monument this large is extremely rare in Japan, where space is a very limited commodity. This is a more typical cemetery scene in Tokyo, where tombstones are piled on top of each other, all the little multiple Buddhist gods are there, and then these little sticks that I call skis have the person's name on them. They explained to me that somehow the more money you give the Buddhist priest, the better name you get. I'm not sure how that works. This is Brother Toyoshima, who they call Einstein. The Numazu church took turns sitting with Sarah during her final weeks of life, and Brother Toyoshima was with her the night she died. He told me about sitting with her and listening to a very loud typhoon raging outside all night long, with strong winds, blowing wind beating against the windows. And throughout the night, he would check Sarah's pulse to be sure she was still alive and observed how she was growing weaker and weaker throughout the night, even as the storm was growing weaker, until he said the final moment she died, the storm died also. I don't tell you these stories about these women to glorify them, but to show you how God takes ordinary people in difficult circumstances and uses them to glorify himself and accomplish his purposes. The paths that these single women blazed during the first half of the 20th century inspired numerous other women to go to various places around the world in the years since then. The decision to leave their comfortable homes, the companionship of friends, the security of family, the conveniences of America, to go to a country where the traditions, language, housing, food, clothing, religion, everything was so different. It's not an easy decision to make. But as one considers the results of the choices made by these dedicated young women, J.M. McCaleb's words seem most fitting. To the young especially, I would say, look well to your decisions, for on them depends not only your own future destiny, but that of others. If you're interested in hearing more about any of these women's lives and the sacrifices they made, again, all of their stories are told in Messengers of the Risen Sun. Thank you.